ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम्
सिक्स्थ कैंटो चैप्टर टू अजामिल डिलीवर्ड बाय द विष्णु दूता
गुरुनां च लघुनां च
गुरुनां च लघुनां च
गुरुणि च लघुनि च
गुरुणि च लघुनि च
कायश्चित्तानि पापानां
कायश्चित्तानि पापानां
ज्ञातानि महर्षिभिः
ज्ञातानि
गुरुनां
गुरुनां
यदि
च
च
एण्ड्
गुरुनां
गुरुनां
लैट्
लैट्
च
आल्सो
आल्सो गुरुणि
गुरुणि
हेवि
हेवि
च
च
एण्ड्
एण्ड्
लघुनि
लघुनि
लैट्
लैट्
च
च
आल्सो
कायश्चित्तानि
कायश्चित्तानि The processes of atonement. Pa'anam.
Pa'anam.
Of sinful activities.
Gyakta.
Knowing perfectly well.
Knowing perfectly well.
Bhuktani.
Bhuktani.
Have been prescribed.
Have been prescribed.
Maharishibhi.
Maharishibhi.
By great sages.
By great sages.
In translation. Authorities who are learned scholars and sages have carefully ascertained that one should atone for the heaviest sins by undergoing a heavy process of atonement, and one should atone for lighter sins by undergoing lighter atonement. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, however, vanquishes all the effects of sinful activities, regardless of whether heavy or light. In this regard, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes an incident that took place when Samba was rescued from the punishment of the Kauravas. Samba fell in love with the daughter of Duryodhana, and since according to Kshatriya custom, one is not offered a Kshatriya's daughter unless he displays his chivalrous valor, Samba abducted her. Consequently, Samba was arrested by the Kauravas. Later, when Lord Balaram came to rescue him, there was an argument about Samba's release. Since the argument was not settled, Balaram showed his power in such a way that all of Hastinapur trembled and would have been vanquished as if by a great earthquake. Then the matter was settled, and Samba married Duryodhana's daughter. The purport is that one should take shelter of Krishna Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose protective power is so great that it cannot be equal in the material world. However powerful the reactions of one's sins, they will immediately be vanquished if one chants the name of Hari, Krishna, Balaram, or Narayan. Om Chakshulimitamena Tasmai Sri Guru Vedima. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Guru Sangadana Srivastati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yesterday we were speaking about realizing that material life involves implication in sinful activity. We have to get out of our minds the foolish notion that we live in a neutral atmosphere and that life is what we make it. No, we live in an atmosphere of contamination. Trigunamayi, the three modes of nature, means that one way or another, you're going to be affected, polluted. You can understand it in terms of physical disease. If you're around people who have a cold, you'll get a cold.
In other words, if you're around someone who has SARS, you're going to probably get SARS. So now everyone is afraid, we don't want to go to the SARS areas. Of course, our dear brother is fearless, he's in Hong Kong, no worries. I mean, his wife is also fearless. In any case, it shows you how people are concerned about picking up contamination, how they're concerned about picking up the wrong kind of influence for their body. Krishna consciousness means to be concerned how not to have your consciousness polluted. For that reason, we take so many precautions. We want to protect the purity of our consciousness that the Hare Krishna mantra brings so that we can become more and more attached to Krishna. Bhakti yoga means organizing our life so that all the necessary facilities and arrangements are there to provoke more and more closeness to Krishna. Closeness to Krishna means closeness to Krishna's service. A Vaishnava is very attached to engaging in the devotional service of the Lord. We don't want to be ritualistic devotees who simply have some religious affiliation and who adopt Krishna consciousness as a belief. Well, there's great benefit to that. No, we want to be active servitors of the Lord. That means we take a proactive stance about contamination, and we take a proactive stance about opportunities for Krishna's service. One way or another, we want to arrange our lives so that we're always in contact with Krishna. And we want to take all the precautions to protect ourselves from the germs of Maya that are rampant. I saw one picture from Hong Kong where young men and women were at a discotheque enjoying it. And while they were dancing, they had the masks over the face. You know, what do you call those things? Surgical mask, yeah. Protecting from SARS. And while they were dancing at a discotheque. It shows you actually enjoying determination of the conditioned soul. Somewhere or other they had to get the nectar at all costs. Had to go to the disco deck, shake their bodies, and attract the opposite sex. But they took precautions to cover their mouth and nose with the surgical mask. This is dog determination. If only we can be so determined about Krishna consciousness. So determined to engage in devotional service, and we'll tolerate any inconveniences that come. Especially as we become more mature and older in devotional service. I know many of you here have been practicing Krishna consciousness for a long time. You have to be concerned about the freshness of your relationship with devotional service. And we must be on the lookout against being locked into patterns and mechanical attitudes towards bhakti yoga. Therefore, a mature devotee, an older devotee, is always looking for ways to stimulate the relationship, get the freshness flowing. Of course, Krishna is ever fresh. There's no problem on Krishna's side. But we can have problems because we are operating in the material atmosphere. We have to be understanding and practical about the atmosphere we live in. It's pushing down. The only way you can be immune to the effects of material nature pushing down is through absorption in devotional service. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. Mahakti yoga vicharena, bhakti yoga na sevate. Sagunan samati jaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. If your absorption in devotional service reaches the full level, then you're immune to the effects of the three modes of material nature. That is the safest position in the material world. Now, while securing that safe position for yourself, what's wrong with tolerating some inconveniences? everyone knows that in the devotional community, sometimes they misunderstand you. Sometimes you're not appreciated. Sometimes you're overlooked. Still, these are small prices to pay for a chance to be secure at Krishna's lotus feet. That is what should be our topmost interest. Just like the young people at the discotheques in Hong Kong, they're tolerating having to wear surgical masks over their faces. They want to get the nectar of dancing and being frivolous, illicit sex culture and nightclubs. The movie can also be tolerant, without a doubt. Interacting with others is sometimes troublesome, but you have to be practical. Especially those of you who are householders, you know that in your own home there's not always harmony. So why do you expect that in the society of devotees you won't be misunderstood sometimes, you won't be appreciated sometimes? Even in your own home you don't get the appreciation every day that you want. Even in your own home you don't get the spontaneous understanding every day that you want. So why is it that we place these unreasonable demands upon the association of devotees? Sometimes in your home life there are crises, you have to work it out. Sometimes in the association of devotees, you have to work things out, discuss, be a bit patient, be a bit tolerant. These are small prices to pay for the chance to be secure at Krishna's lotus feet by being absorbed in devotional service. We want to analyze our life and see how much service is there, how much Krishna is in the center of my life. Whether I'm living in the ashram or living at home, there's nothing automatic. Let me look and see how much I'm striving to increase my attraction for Krishna through the holy name and devotional service. Then our spiritual progress will always be fresh and lively. If that's not there, we cannot blame Krishna. We have to blame ourselves. We need to understand the atmosphere we're living in and take the necessary steps. We shouldn't have just a casual attitude towards living in the material world. We should know that this is an impure atmosphere we're living in, and therefore there are going to be problems unless we are careful. The paradox of material life is that conditioned souls are trying to be happy in an impure place. It cannot work. Happiness comes from purity. Purity meaning there's no impediments between you and Krishna. Now, we must look into our hearts and minds and see that we've been ingrained with a certain crazy notion due to growing up in Kali Yuga. That crazy notion is that there can be happiness without purification. There can be pleasure without purification. Now just think about it. How it seems natural to the materialistic mind and tells us that there's such a thing as pleasure without going through purification. This is what you're up against. This notion is what troubles you in your quest for spiritual life. Whether you're a young devotee or an old devotee, you have these haunting conceptions that pleasure and happiness is possible without purification. And therefore, as you traverse your way through the fluid material atmosphere, you take it as natural in your weak moments that, well, pleasure exists, it's just we can't do those things because we're devotees. But some people are just naturally engaged in pleasure, but we can't do that. Now, you must analyze the quality of the experience of the so-called happiness. Because it's born of the impure material atmosphere, that so-called happiness, that so-called sukha, is laced with anxiety, laced with inflated expectations. And on its heels comes disappointment. That is the nature of anything within the material atmosphere. a devotee should think very deeply about what is sukha. You don't have to think too deeply about dukkha, distress. No one wants that. But what about sukha, material happiness? How much are we still attracted to that commodity and think it has value and worth? Of course, we don't want to present ourselves as like killjoys. We're on the lookout for anybody who thinks they're happy and it's your other, and I'll smash them. No. At the same time, we are on the lookout for those who want to try to understand this most important point. That the sukha, the happiness, material happiness, doesn't have what it takes to fulfill you. I remember Guru Nandguru and I were having a discussion at a householder's housewarming. They had just gotten the new homes and they had a yajna. And so we were invited to speak. And so I was thinking, what to say? As a sannyasi, you know, at a housewarming, what do I say? Hey guys, it's great, you got this house, get into it, just enjoy, I mean, wow, like... This is what everybody needs, and... Of course I couldn't say that. But then could I go to the other extreme? This is all my This is the trap that you're caught in. Your home will be your downfall. It's a bit of material design. They can't say that either. So, of course, that's what I was discussing, what to say. So, how do we give our blessings and encourage them to be happy in their hustle life, but at the same time, you know, fanning the flame of material desire. So, we're going to move up with a very nice mantra. So, in my presentation, I made this point. The mantra was, be as happy as you can be in a world that is no happiness. They covered both sides. Think about it. They were blessings, but they were blessings based on wisdom and knowledge. May you be as happy as you can be in a world where there's no happiness. So I was satisfied with that. In other words, as part of your ashram, your Vyasa ashram, you have the right to make a pleasant arrangement. But at the same time, don't expect too much in this kind of world. So, the family appreciated that. I found, though, not all families appreciate that. When I was in Brazil, you know, that couple that was driving us around, right after their marriage, they came to me for their blessing. I gave that mantra. Be as happy as you can be in a world where there's no happiness. Kind of wife looked at me and said, "Riley, Riley, match my So I quickly explained, I got this from a senior household. I had not made this. Anyway, it does cause you to think, perhaps in Brazil, which is like the Gold Coast attitude multiplied by 100. They weren't so receptive as in Australia. Yes, Brazil's Gold Coast attitude multiplied by 100. There's just no question about certain things. Just let it go, let it flow, let it happen. Anyway, we shouldn't be afraid to use our purified intelligence and understanding. Sukha, material happiness. The Shastra explains that just like dukkha, distress comes into your life without invitation. the material happiness will. This is a very interesting presentation by Prahlada Maharaj and also Narada Muni. You don't have to try for material happiness. You're going to get all that you're due, no less and no more, even if you don't try for it. And the logic is made very clear. You don't try for distress. Does anyone here work to get distress? Does anyone rise in the morning and say, what are we going to do to wreck the day? So what are we going to do to bring some misery? None of you do that. But still, problems come, distress comes. So now Rumi's point, Prahlada Maharaj's point is, the same thing is true of sukha, material happiness. You don't have to try for it. You want to get what you're supposed to get, not one drop more or less, according to your karma. By the course of time, time is not just numbers on a clock. Time is an energy of Krishna that's bringing you things. It's bringing you your reactions from the past, both good and bad. And it tells a person, understands, my body is like a bag of reactions waiting to happen. What am I going to do about that? But in today's hedonistic degrading culture, you are trained to think that your body is an opportunity for pleasure waiting to happen. You can just analyze yourself and see how deep this notion goes. Of course, those of you born in India, you don't have this as deep on the surface, but it's being instilled even in India by so much Western movies, television. And the people there becoming, they're rushing to dive into these kind of things. When I was in Mumbai recently, just riding the car over there, this is the last night, I think. No, this is the second time you were there. So, you're having programs, like 500 young men between the ages of 18 and 30, and the theme of one program was frustrated love. I was shocked to see the whole place packed out with like 700 young men. And so this is the most vital subject matter. Of course, I was explaining both the temporal understanding of frustrated love and the deep understanding that our loving propensity disconnected from Krishna just causing us trouble. Anyway, they were most eager to understand all aspects of this issue, especially the temporal issue. Of course, that's not my job to go so deeply into the temporal issue. But I use the temporal issues to point out the eternal fact that because we are part of Krishna, we have this loving propensity, which is meant to be applied to Krishna. Anyway, so many came eager to hear. And in fact, news media came, so many reporters came, a whole crew from Star TV came, four cameramen and an interviewer, the Star TV team went around the whole temple interviewing young men. Are you frustrated in love? Is that why you're here? You've been frustrated in love before. But it showed me that the people in India now, they think it's time to catch up. We've made such progress with our computer engineering skills. We've surpassed the West. Everyone wants us for our dedication to computer science. But now we also want to master this thing called passion. I'm going to find out all about it. That's the attitude now. So, it shows you the power of Kali Yuga and how we have to be careful that we don't still harbor in our hearts so many crazy notions. One of my senior godbrothers was telling me
he had spent many decades in Mumbai, and he was telling me that actually a major reason for his illness was just seeing the effect of the degradation descending upon India. Mumbai wasn't like it was 30 years ago, when it was gentlemanly, ladylike dealing, finesse and culture, refinement. So he could see the whole progression going downwards, and it had gotten so bad that it actually affected his health. It wasn't the Mumbai he knew when Prabhupada's order first went there 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago. So, you have to understand how material nature works. It's not an innocent thing. One has to be careful and use your intelligence to analyze your life and see how you're open to contamination. Analyze your life and see what false understandings are still there in your consciousness. That there is such a thing as material happiness. There is such a thing as material fulfillment. No, it's not bigger. But we imagine it to be so, and therefore we suffer so much. We contaminate ourselves by our attachment to these faulty notions. Meanwhile, we don't even understand that we've got to cope with sinful reactions from our past activities. Part of human intelligence is to understand. As I said, the body is a bag of reactions waiting to happen. What are we going to do about that? It's not that we simply have a responsibility for what happens in the present. We also have a responsibility to deal with our past sinful reactions. Think about that. How many of you meditate on that point? I have a responsibility to deal with my past sinful reactions. That's why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, don't worry. Surrender to me and I'll take care of your sinful reactions. But if you don't understand the value in Krishna's proposal, you won't care. So what? Krishna says we'll take care of our sinful reactions. Then who cares? But if you're a properly educated human being, you'll be very impressed by Krishna's offer. Just render devotional service to me, I'll take care of all the karma. You'd be very attracted to that. Yes, this is a great deal. This is a great offer. So think about it. How much are we understanding that we have a responsibility to do something about our past and for reactions? Otherwise, when the inevitable reactions come, we get very depressed and angry. How did God let this happen to me? Not knowing that we brought all these things upon ourselves. In Chaitanya Lila, there's the story of Subhuti Roy. When he was younger, he was a wealthy landowner, and he had a Muslim under his employ. Now that Muslim was later to become the Nawab, the ruler of a portion of the area. But at that point in time, though, he was just a young boy and working for Subhuti Roy, and Subhuti Roy put him in charge of digging a lake. And the young boy made some mistake, and Subhuti Roy whipped him a few times with a whip on his back. Later, by the arrangement of karma, that boy became the Nawab, the Muslim ruler of the area. It shows you, this is the way karma works. Someone is downtrodden in the beginning, later they become very powerful. Just like the U.S. Army general who was in charge of the Iraqi operation. He was, in high school, known to be not too intelligent. In terms of, I guess, the normal criteria for high school education. But somehow, because of his karma, he rose up through the army to a high position and
No doubt he displayed material ability, which had been picked up on during his high school years. Not criticizing that material factor. So he went to his high school reunion a few years ago. He was describing, and one of his teachers was still there after all these years. That was the karma of a teacher. After 30 years, still, being a teacher in some, country school in the middle of Oklahoma. Meanwhile, his student, who was supposed to be so intelligent, was now, five-star or four-star general in the U.S. Army. So that karma worked. So the teacher went up to him, I can imagine the teacher was very old at that point, 30 years, 40 years of teaching school in a small school in the rural area of Oklahoma. That's like, I don't know anything about the state, but like, I guess like, the equivalent of a teacher we have. So he went back for a reunion, and the teacher came up to him and said, four-star general in charge of all the armies of our great nation. And the teacher told him, you weren't, back in your high school days, you weren't exactly the brightest bulb in the socket. So the general replied, sure is a great country, ain't it? If he wanted to get a break, then Anyway, it's the karma. This person had the karma to rise to a high position. You know, see how the karma results. But this is the way things work. Now you have the young man who's working for Subhuti Roy. And he was under Subhuti Roy's care. He made a mistake. Subhuti Roy whipped him. Later, this person became the Nawab. And out of gratitude for Subhuti Roy raising him, he gave wealth to Subhuti Roy. He simply saw that he took care of me. He tried to raise me. He tried to train me. He appreciated it. Devotees, of course, should always appreciate those who have contributed to their devotional nourishment and training. We should always thank anyone who has helped us in Krishna consciousness, and we should feel eternally indebted. Not just, you helped me when I was in Bhakta, but now I'm hot stuff, so get back. My turn to rule. Now everything's been wrong in the temple. I'm going to fix it. It's a new day. A devotee is always sensitive and appreciative of how anyone has contributed to his or her spiritual advancement. From the person who introduced Krishna consciousness to you, to those who have helped to train you as a young devotee, Mataji on standard time lost the children's weekend. Encouraged me to take a personal counseling. Of course, I was already reading for all those books, but I had no desire to go to the temple, so she encouraged me to go to the temple. Also helped the process by extracting donations from it so I didn't have any more money then. So whenever I go to Vrindavan, I offer my obeisances. We appreciate anyone who's tried to give us encouragement and training, helping us in Krishna's service. That's a very necessary part of Krishna consciousness. Not that, you helped me back then, but now it's different. Now I know so much. You don't want to be like that. So, this Muslim, even he had that kind of culture. So Guru Roy helped me so much. He raised me, he trained me, I was under his employ. Now I'm the Nawab. I'll give him some options. This is culture. But the Nawab had a problem. The other half, the wife, he saw, he noticed that he had some whip marks on his back. And she took great offense. Obviously, she's thinking, who has marred the beautiful back of my husband? Who has dared to do this? So, the husband, well, I'll explain to her. So, Rudy Roy did that when I was younger. He punished me. You know, I had, goofed up in some way. I was irresponsible. He punished me. And immediately said, I want him dead. Kill him. So, the Muslim ruler, replied, how can I do that? I'm indebted to him. He was simply like a father to me. He was helping to raise me. His motives were completely above board. He didn't listen. I want him dead. Kill him. So, I guess those of you who are married men know that once the wife gets, rocked onto something, you have two choices, I guess. Either ignore her and just, ride out a rough storm, or the most convenient thing to do is just, yes, whatever you say. So, the Muslim told him, look, I can't kill him. He's done so much for me. And she was so insistent, she wouldn't give up. Obviously, she's thinking, so finally she came up with a better proposal. All right, if you're not going to kill him, then force him to become a Muslim. So the Muslim ruler, that's a better alternative. The Prophet explained that so many Hindus in India became Muslims because, not of birth, but because of social convention. The notion was there that if you had improper association with Muslims, you became a Muslim. Like Rupa Sanatan Goswami said, that they were considered to be Muslims, although they were born in the status of Brahmana family. They were considered to be Muslims because there's so much association. So, during these days in India, sometimes Hindus would convert to Islam just to avoid paying a special tax that the Muslim regime put in place. You want to be Hindu? Fine, you pay an extra tax more than everybody else. And many Hindus say, hey, if I pay the tax, we'll become Muslim. And sometimes Muslims would forcibly so-called convert Hindus by forcing them to eat cow's flesh. And so the Hindu would take it. Oh, now we have to be Muslims, we've been forced to eat cow flesh. In other words, this is all bodily designation religion. That external activity, even by force, means that you belong to this religious group or that religious group. So, the verdict was that the Nawab should forcibly convert Subhudi Roy to Stephen Wilson. Yes, Subhudi Roy. Forcibly convert Subhudi Roy to Islam by sprinkling water from his water pot upon his head. Nawab did that. And Subhudi Roy thought, oh no, now I'm a Muslim, what can I do? Actually, he was old and he was thinking about leaving his home life and retiring anyway. So he took the opportunity of this being sprinkled by water from a Muslim's water pot to leave home, leave his wealthy position. And he went to Varanasi and he consulted many Brahmanas there. And consulting a Brahmana is like consulting a lawyer or a doctor. You get a different opinion from every Brahmin you talk to. Because the basic purview of ritualistic activities and good karma and punya and counteracting papa, sinful activities is so vast, like 20 dharma shastras recommending different things for different things you've done wrong and stuff. He talked to the Brahmins, some of them told him, oh, the only thing that can counteract this devastation in your life is by drinking hot lead. You're killing yourself. It's very heavy with what's happening. Other Brahmins would say, well, it's not so heavy. You don't have to do anything severe as drinking hot lead. So, Sugriva was perplexed. At least, though, these Brahmanas had the understanding that life in this world involves reactions. And so they were concerned how to cope with the reactions that you incur in life. Well, Sugriva was confused what I was supposed to do. Am I a Muslim or am I not? Is my life a wreck or is it not? How do I atone for this horrible thing that's happened to me? Being sprinkled by water from the water pot of a Muslim? What am I going to do? He went to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya told him, Prabhupada tells the story in a special way. Lord Chaitanya, when he heard the situation, he said, just see how low has the Hindu religion fallen. Just see how ridiculous the understandings are. Someone thinking they become a Muslim just by having some water from a water pot with the harm. This is interesting. And Lord Chaitanya told him, just go to Vrindavan and take shelter of the holy name. Even by a glimpse of pure chanting, you'll be freed of all sinful reaction. And when you attain pure chanting, you'll be firmly situated at the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the best protection against sinful reactions. When you're firmly established at the lotus feet of the Lord. In this way, Mahaprabhu was referring to the three stages of chanting. Namaparad, offensive chanting, all too familiar to us, unfortunately. And then Namavas, the clearing stage, where you get a glimpse of what it's like to be free, almost free of all offenses. In that clearing stage, you get freedom from sinful reaction. You get liberation from material world. And then there's the final stage, Shuddhanam, pure chanting, in which you are established in your eternal relationship with Krishna. So this pastime of Subhuti Roy shows you that an intelligent human being is concerned. What about my reactions? What am I going to do? The problem today is that no one cares about them. Explain to the Yama Buddhists that, just like in Sigmund Roy's case, authorities who are learned scholars and sages, they have delineated a whole system of action and reaction. Heavy atonement for heavy sins, light atonement for light sins. But actually, you can get above all these complexities just by chanting Hare Krishna, which vanquishes the reactions of all sinful activities, whether they are heavy or light. Therefore, we should be very grateful that we have a chance to chant all we need, sort out our lives, and establish ourselves at Krishna's lotus feet. In that connection, in the purport, we have this story described by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti about Sambha. And how he was captured in the process of kidnapping the daughter of Duryodhana. And Lord Balaram himself came to rescue Sambha. And the Kauravas weren't agreeing to release Sambha. So Balaram demonstrated his power in such a way that all of Hastinapur trembled like an earthquake. Then immediately the Kauravas, you take him. And he was fine, we'll forget his offense.
the point of this story is not so much Samba's affair with the daughter of the rover. The point is that when Krishna shows up, when Balaram shows up, any problem is more than fixed. You see, in Balaram's case, as the Supreme Personality Godhead, he provided the maximum solution. Oh, you're not going to release Samba? Okay, just watch what happens. The whole ground of Hastinapur is shaking like a great earthquake. This way, Balaram is showing. Anyone who takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will more than be protected. Just like a good business understands that whenever there's a problem with a customer, it's not actually a problem, it's an opportunity for building a lifelong relationship. That's the IBM has that motto. Customer calls up, says there's a problem, they respond in such a way, they take advantage to build the relationship so that the person is forever in danger. Well, Krishna is much better at that than the best material cooperative. I remember I was in Sydney years ago and had a problem with my laptop. And I called up IBM. They said, don't worry, we'll get back to you in less than 15 minutes. So then, 10 minutes later, I got a phone call. You heard about your problem, we want that laptop right now. I said, well, how am I going to get to you? I'm just a traveler passing through Sydney, how am I going to get the laptop to you? That's not your problem. Give us the address. They come and get it to the tower. Then 5 minutes after that call, came another call from IBM, from someone else. We're just checking, Mr. Matsya, that someone did call you within 15 minutes to check on your problem. And then, indeed, the courier came in 1 hour, with all the necessary packing to take the computer and have it ready. Then I got another phone call half hour later from IBM. We're just checking to make sure the courier came on time. I don't have much expectation of the material energy, but still you would be affected by all this,
Whoa, okay.
So then they had my laptop and the next day they called up and said, we're going to need to keep it just one more day. Sorry we can't fix it in 24 hours, but we'll have it back to you in 48 hours. I was expecting it to be a week or 2 weeks or whatever. So I said, hey, I have a problem. I'm leaving Sydney. I'm going to Perth. Mr. Matsya, that is not your problem. Wherever you are, we will make this happen. Okay. So even as cynical as devotees can get about material nature, it naturally was the experience is deeply imprinted on me. Naturally, one would think, hey, I'm going to get another laptop. It'll be IBM, It can't be like that. And they had that policy. Any problem, they overkill. They just oversolve it. So that you will be eternally indebted and always buy IBM. Okay, so that's a mundane example. But why should we think Krishna is less than that? Why do we think Krishna is less? Krishna and Balaram, their reciprocation for us is less than what we'll find in a material corporation, in the material world. That's under the laws of karma and part of Sri Guru Maya. This is our craziness. So this is what Balaram is showing in his example with Samba. He overdid the solution. He oversaw the situation. Okay, karmas, you're not handing over Samba? Watch this. The whole city starts shaking. To demonstrate, anyone who takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be protected. So that is the point of Vishnu Mantra and so forth, mentioning this incident. The purport is that one should take shelter of Krishna all along, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose protective power is so great that it cannot be equaled in the material world. However powerful the reactions of one's sins, they will immediately be vanquished if one chants the name of Hari, Krishna, Balaram. Any questions?
What part of the
sloka indicates the holy name? The whole chapter is about the holy name.
No, but just in the actual words, which one is it? Not the real.
You can You can talk to our local pundit Matsya, who will explain to you that in the Sanskrit verses, not every word is there because the meaning is not implied. It's a stronger word than implied. The meaning is present. It's something that anyone with proper consciousness can see. So it's not that Prabhupada is adding that in there. It's just that due to the degradation of the times, people don't have the purity to see what's there, and so Prabhupada brings it out, what's there, not that he adds something into it. Sometimes mundane scholars, they attack Prabhupada's books. He puts Krishna everywhere! Look in this verse, the word Krishna is not there, he puts it there! they protest like that. They don't understand Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. As Lord Chaitanya, who's our authority, explains, every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam reeks with devotional service. It's saturated with bhakti. So it's not that, the Vaishnavas are having their interpretation. No, that's what the Shastra is. That's what Bhagavatam is. So, in order to help us, because we're not pure devotional Sanskrit scholars, Prabhupada takes an equalizer. You know anything about equalizer? And if you have a sound system in your home, an equalizer. And so he adjusts the bass and the treble just so you can see what's there. Because Bhagavatam is meant for the topmost transcendentals. Paramodamatsuranamsutam. Those who are Paramahansas. Those who are completely free of enmity, material contamination. That's who Bhagavatam is meant for. But since so many readers don't have Paramahansa qualifications, Bhagavatam mercifully brings out what's there, sticks it under your nose. So it's not that he's injecting it in there, he's bringing it out. But if you are a devotional Sanskrit scholar who's properly trained in Bhagavatam, you'll know the whole context of the chapter is about the holy name. Just like the previous verse says, Harir it yavashenaha. It refers to if one chants the holy name of Hari. It's not that, just like when you're talking to someone, you do need things to be understood because you already mentioned the previous sentence. I can't think of off the top of my head of a good example. But that's the way people talk in everyday conversation. You don't repeat things every sentence. Today we are going to the store. The store will have this. When we're at the store, we will do that. And then once we leave the store, you say it once, the store, and then later you use pronouns. After we're there, then we're going to do this. When we leave from there, so on and so forth. And you can get even more implicit than that. Well, that's a rough way of explaining what's going on here. Mm. But you have to ask a good question because impersonalists, they're always trying to attack the Vaishnavas in this way. You say every verse is about Krishna. That's just your interpretation. Mm-hmm. You want to interpret? Just that's what we do. We'll show you how these verses mean that the absolute truth is impersonal.
And they get so ridiculous. When Krishna says, surrender to me, they just like push Krishna aside. What does it really mean here? And this last week, in Wellington, New Zealand, I was giving a workshop or discussion. One young lady, she was about in her 20s, a physics student from the university. She attended, and later I found out she had been raised by, since childhood, by parents who were following the Shankaracharya line, the Western equivalent. They have this outfit called a School of Philosophy. I don't know if they have that here in Australia. School of Philosophy, where they attract people by saying, we're going to teach you all kinds of philosophy, you'll understand life. And then as you get deeper and deeper into the curriculum, they just start training you with Mayavada philosophy. So, she had been through that school. I didn't know that. So, anyway, and to her parents' credit, they had raised her in mode of goodness way. So I was at first thinking, oh, this person's got a bit of a shine to her face, looks like not involved in the typical university simple activities. So afterwards I began to speak to her about Krishna, tell her, you know, you should, you know, learn about Krishna, and like that. And she kind of set off my alarm bells. Said, you know, you should devote your life to your intelligence, to understanding God. He said, very quietly, yeah, but not here. Not this life. Well, what a place to be. So then, I suspected this could be some of the person is back. So I just began to speak about the eternality of individuality. Krishna is a person, we are persons. That is an eternal fact. And she challenged me. Where does it say that? You're going to be so. I knew that, I said, which way are we going to be? We're going to be in Jones is a bit like, you know, I didn't expect an answer like that. So I brought out the Bhagavad Gita. I put a pestle and put a Bhagavad Gita in her hand, and he turns that verse in purport. And I said, would you please read out loud this verse in purport? And I was just taking the book in her hand, she said, you mean me? I said, no, not you, but the impersonal energy behind you. She got a look at me like, not you, I didn't mean you, I meant, you know. So, she got kind of a premonition of what was coming. So then, I mean, I appreciated the discipline by which her parents had raised her. She took the Gita in her hand and very carefully and deliberately, with full attention, read the verse in purport. And I was just watching the reaction of her face, because I could see that in that purport, Prabhupada had packed the purport with every possible argument for destroying Mayavada conception. So she was just reading it calmly, like, on and on she was reading, as Prabhupada just annihilated the whole impersonalistic interpretation. And I wouldn't say anything, I just let Prabhupada's purport work on it. But every once in a while when Prabhupada would make a, you know, really key point, I would say, and she just kept reading, you know. Her Prabhupada, you know, dealt with the whole point about, well, if Krishna is talking about individuality, he's referring to material individuality of the body. And of course, Prabhupada explained that. How did Krishna do that? When just a few verses before, he had condemned the bodily conception. So I could see, and I was watching her face, and I could see that in that one purport, Prabhupada had kicked out like 20 years of Mayavadi training in it. And she was shaking. By the time she got to the end, she just went, put the book down. And then she kind of left the room and picked up, you know, I was watching, she picked up the phone, she was calling her parents, like, somebody want to pick me up? And then the devotees surrounded her, and please sit down, have some prasad, like that. So that's, I forgot to mention, when I gave her the Bhagavad Gita and I put the verse in her hands to read, the first thing she did was
okay, it says this, but let's see what it really means. That's how she's been trained. Like, let's get, let me read the Sanskrit. Come on, you know, 22-year-old. Yeah. That's the arrogance that this, the impersonalist attitude can put in you. Okay, let's see what it really means. Yeah, I didn't say it, I was thinking, get real, little girl, you know. What do you know? I mean, how dare you take Krishna's Bhagavad Gita and think that you can just start twisting with it? So I just cut her off. I said, look, it says not three times. Never, never, never. But she kind of gave me a look like, well, I'll go home and consult my Mayavadi parents and hope I know the truth about this verse, because it can't be like it says. There's got to be another interpretation. And if we're genuine followers of Bhagavad Gita, we interpret. We don't take Krishna literally. That was her attitude. So this is an important point we have to understand about Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. It's not that the Vaishnavas are inserting Krishna and Bhakti Yoga there. No, simply Prabhupada with his translations is bringing it out, amplifying what's there, so that we don't miss it with our Kali Yuga brains. Anyway, you can ask our local pundit in training who wants to go explain to us what the extraordinary wonders that Prabhupada has done with his translations. He's made it so it's bulletproof. Just like you're talking to a child, you've just got to explain everything very clearly. That's what Prabhupada has done. But he's made it very clear in such a natural, such a sweet way. Because Bhagavatam is not only, Bhagavatam is especially meant for the Paramahansas. So Prabhupada has written his books in such a way that even when you become the most advanced devotee, still you relish his books. Anything? Yeah?
How do you get some of those substitutions on the people who talk to us? They are like that. Not an open mind, you know, to see what we are saying to them. So how do you handle them? Because what happens, during the argument, the tempers may go hard because the fellow is not understanding. So how to control that? Because that sometimes is discovered at such a later stage, then the things have already taken the negative shape.
Yes, yes. Very important point. You see, we are not in the business of arguing with people. We are in the business of spreading Lord Chaitanya's sanctification. We're not even in the business of arguing with impersonals and Mayavadis. But because, in the case I was talking to you about, because this girl had just come out in the opening, you know, I need to learn about God here. Just coming out with a bit of arrogance, I had to defend Krishna. That's a difference. But not that I was like picking a fight with her and wanted to, devastate her. But because, there were people in the audience and there were devotees there, and she was starting to subtly attack Krishna, I had to say something. I was very gentle with her. And we acted with Prasad afterwards. We're not in the business of debating and wrangling with people. We're in the business of spreading what Chaitanya is saying about movement, chanting, dancing, understanding about the Vishnu. But if they force us, and especially they want to publicly embarrass Krishna, which is what I can tolerate. I mean, she was being subtle but snide. I didn't want to let it remain in the air that she had made a snide remark about Bhakti and Krishna, as if she had the real understanding. But I was just a very gentle way to teach her a lesson. So she got the point. At the same time, she wasn't devastated, and all I did was ask her to read Prabhupada's purport. And in that purport, he just tore apart every Mayavadi conception. And I was just amazed watching her face. It's like, as she was reading it, she was like, Prabhupada has just, dealt with 20 years of her conditioning. But she was shocked after she read it. Now, whether she has the good fortune to break out of that. Definitely she was locked. I mean, of course, as she was walking out the door, I did kind of mention that. Yeah, one day you realize that everything you learned is wrong. I got a very gentle, you know, way you can say things. You know, I realize everything you learned is wrong. So we already know everything. she'd already been filled with lush, you know, wonderful, luscious prasad and good conversation. So, you know, it was kind of like a symphony, all different approaches blending. So, and I just kind of, you know, it was a very light way as you walk out the door. I said, Dad, you want to hold up? Yeah. See you again? Yeah. One day you'll realize everything you learned is wrong. Now, what do you mean? I don't say very much. What do you say? Yeah. Oh, please come again for dinner.
Yes, yes, I'll come again for dinner.
Yeah,
we had a boy, very similar, but this was the last time he was sticking up to him. He was really the guy who did it. The best thing that happened to him.
What did he say?
Eventually he just told me, I offered him to take the books, and then he looked at him and just said, I just can't read those books, There was such a strong reaction to really such a fixed up in personal.
Bye, anything else?
I'll go ahead and